Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But the people watching, they will notice that Philly's not here. He's here, but he's not here. We've had to censor him. He's copying Kelly's goal celebration yesterday, and we don't want to get taken off YouTube for showing too much flesh. So that's why he's not allowed on camera today.
Similar figures, actually.
I wish we had the viewing figures. 17 and a half million. Deary me. I mean, I was one of them, so you know, I don't know if I count that. For those watching, though, on YouTube, you will get a picture of Phil at the Fish and Chip Challenge, which was, how many years ago now? 19th of July, 2017. Jeez.
Almost as big a shock as Salford.
Well, what's happened this weekend, Phil? What's been going on? Because obviously there's that. There's Wakefield winning at Castleford for the first time in this millennium. Leeds with the greatest comeback no one's ever seen. What was in the water?
The world has gone mad. But the good thing is that it's all good publicity for the sport, isn't it? We've had the Bash weekend as well. We've had some women's rugby league, of which, again, St Helens' victory over York virtually went unheralded, but it's massive in terms of what's happening in that division. Had a couple of very important wheelchair games, which also saw Halifax beat Leeds, which means that the league leadership, I think, can be won by either them or Leeds or Wigan, which is, again, fantastic. So, yeah, it's been an amazing weekend amongst... Oh, we shouldn't forget Midlands Hurricanes either.
No, who won
24-0 at Hunslet. I mean, again, you know, I think the focus of the sporting world has perhaps not been on the Oval Ball game this weekend, but we've got a lot to be shouting about.
Speaking of those varying points, if you listen to the podcast, there'll be some content after, which you may have seen already on YouTube from the various coaches after the games on Sunday at the Bash. But if you're watching this programme, not only will we have our special guest later, but also even more special guests, because yesterday when I was at the Bash, I was walking to go and speak to the Barrow ladies after their victory and was accosted by Martin Coyd. So he's on the programme as well. And Lewis King, who I keep thinking won the Golden Boot, but he didn't. He won the Domestic Player of the Year award when we were at the awards. So yes, some bonus interviews coming up later from the wheelchair game. So got wheelchairs covered, women's covered, and the championship this week. So, you know, that should please some people. How was your Saturday at the Bash? I was there Sunday, but how was the Saturday with the big clash between Lee and Featherstone?
I think all of the games at the Bash have been just a tad underwhelming, and maybe they need to look at just moving away from derby fixtures per se. Clearly, you're always going to get some derby fixtures because of the geographical spread of the division. But obviously, I think Sheffield ran away with the first game, which was a bit of a surprise because London had played so well against Halifax the week before. The second game, with our good friend Craig Lingard, had told us, you know, he's not a big fan of the Bash. I can see why. Dewsbury made the mistake of going 6-0 up early on and then got beaten by 60. Bradford Halifax never really exploded. Halifax were too good in the first half, and there is a clear disparity between the teams that are now in the playoff places and those that are languishing outside it. And again, I'm not sure that Featherstone Lee was desperately competitive. The most interesting thing about that was Brian McDermott afterwards, who said, "Oh yeah, we can beat Lee when it matters." Which is very reminiscent of him being in charge at Leeds in 2017. So I think, you know, we can debate, has the luster gone from the occasion? What does it actually mean? I just don't think we got any games like we did at Magic that are going to live long in the memory. It is a festival. Clearly, you know, the passionate were there. We do a really good job of preaching to the converted. The converted were there. The other thing that struck me looking around the crowd on Saturday, and it is a very long day, four games on the trot, is that there weren't a lot of neutrals or young people in the audience, and that would be a concern. And I don't know how you do get people to stay in a stadium for, what was it, close on nine, nearly 10 hours. When it doesn't have the attraction of the seaside or a city centre where you can nip out and do a bit of shopping. I mean, you could have walked into Headingley and had a pint at the original Oak or other such establishments if you'd have wanted to. But I'm not sure it had the same vibe around it. And again, a 20,000-seater or capacity stadium that only has 6,500 people on a Saturday, I gather perhaps not quite so many yesterday, it does feel a little bit soulless, despite the very best efforts of fans of Lee and Featherstone, who and one or two other teams, I think the Cumbrians yesterday, who tried to give it an atmosphere.
Yeah, I said it last week, and it's not saying it in hindsight, but it just doesn't work as an event not in Blackpool, because it has the inherent advantage in Blackpool, as you say, of having all the other stuff there to do, so you can go in and out and not have to be sat down for 8, 9, 10 hours. You know, I was flagging after the second game, and I wasn't going to stay for the last one anyway, so it wasn't a major issue. But it's a long day, and there didn't appear to be much. Now, I know even at Blackpool, you know, year one, there was plenty to do around the ground, stalls and such, and that went downhill as the years went on. But there appeared to be absolutely nothing to do at Headingley. But I'll go by the New England shirt, which everybody apparently hates. So, you know, I don't know how that went down, but
I saw somebody wearing one.
Well, I don't mind it. I wish people would get upset more about, you know, Burke's being employed in rugby league clubs than the colour of the England shirt. But, you know, can't hope for these things, can you? But it's an event without feeling like an event. There's nothing there apart from here's some rugby league, which with the best way in the world, no one's going to, as you say, we're preaching to the converted. If you're not a rugby league fan or one of the fans of the 6, 8 teams involved, because there's four games on both days, there's nothing there to get you there other than come watch some second division rugby, which isn't necessarily going to be something you're going to draw the neutrals on.
I also think there's nothing there to make you stay if you are a fan of one of the teams once your side has played, which, again, you're absolutely right. You need other things going on around the ground. Newcastle was great this year, and clearly the weather helped. But a lot of the things going on in the fan zone, you know, you could buy an ice cream outside. Yeah. I'd go to an event just to buy an ice cream, clearly.
At Blackpool, I've just looked there, capacity is 16,000, but the main stand at Blackpool looks smaller. It doesn't, Headingley looks big, and it's deceptive because of the open terrace at the end, of course, but it just felt empty, which doesn't help, regardless of how many thousands of tickets you've sold or haven't sold. And I think going back to the women's grand final the year before, and I know, again, they only opened the north stand, but that felt fuller because that looked busy, and it never looked busy because you've got four sets of eight sets of fans or whatever. So it's a shame because the championship clubs, obviously, somebody wants an event. I don't know who it is. Like I say, the championship clubs want it, but I'm not sure they do, apart from to sell an extra shirt or two. But there's an obvious point to Magic Weekend. There's not an obvious point to the Summer Bash. I've written about it in the magazine 6 years ago or whatever, and nothing's changed. It just seems to be a thing we do because we've always done it.
What would be interesting is to check the economics of it, because if there was, let's say, a total of 9,000 tickets sold over the weekend, is that sufficient for the RFL and all the clubs to make any money out of it. Because if it isn't, if their return is negligible or it's costing them to go to the bash, then that's a good enough reason to say, let's not do it. I'm all for having festivals. I'm all for getting clubs together in the same venue. I don't know how that works best. I don't think it should be an add-on to the season. I'm absolutely in agreement with Craig Lingard on that, that if you're going to have it, then it needs to be a part of the season. Where you have it, do you take it on the road? What's your eighth game? Because again, with the greatest respect to the women of Barrow and Featherstone, that arguably was one of the closest games of the whole weekend. It took 2 hours to complete. And, you know, I'm not sure, again, that that's going to drag any more neutral fans in. The York St. Helens women's game got virtually no coverage. Even played at Thato Heath. That in the context of the Women's Super League season is huge. Now, putting that on at Headingley may or may not have got more people there. The interesting thing about that is that clearly St. Helens men were playing on Sunday afternoon as well as the women. And, you know, when you can't support both, we've got something wrong there. So we need to look at all of that and be a little bit more joined up in our thinking. You know, games on our league at the same time as there's games on Premier Sport. You know, I'm just not sure we've got a seamless product there this weekend.
I'm sure there's a good reason why Salford women were in a cup final played at Oral at the same time as their men were playing at the AJ Bell. But why didn't they play that cup final at the AJ Bell before the game? I'm sure there's probably a reason why it was played at Oral, but you just say, tough, we're going to move it to the AJ Bell because people might actually see it. I don't, you know, it's, and again, you know, there must have been a reason why it was played there. I don't know what it is, and I apologize for that, but it just makes more sense. And I don't know why you wouldn't make more sense. You know, next week, Leeds Saints is at Headingley. That makes sense.
Well, Salford fans, I was fortunate to be there and witness their amazing performance for the men yesterday. You know, lots of people were asking at halftime, how are the women doing? So there's clearly an interest there. And even at the end, when they were rejoicing, as they quite rightly should, one of the best performances the men have put on for years, they were also trying to laud the women winning the League Cup. But they didn't really have the information at their fingertips. So, again, you know, it doesn't seem to make a huge amount of sense this weekend. There's been some wonderful headlines, some fabulous stories, some astonishing performances, but I'm not sure it's all been joined up. I mean, I'll give you another example. I thought the draw for the PDRL fixtures on the last leg on Friday night was brilliantly done. You know, ostensibly, there wasn't really a news feature there. But what we got was some great, you know, 15, 20 minutes of exposure on mainstream television to an unfamiliar audience. A lot of fun attached to it as well, which is great. Hats off to the World Cup for giving that avenue. But I haven't seen anywhere what these fixtures now actually are. I haven't seen anybody promote them. I haven't seen the times of the games. It was on a little notice board that Sean Briscoe was putting the logos on. But if you don't put out a press release following that up, telling people how they can go and see these matches, you've almost missed your opportunity. One of the greatest things I've seen on social media was the Lionesses going into the press conference and disrupting it. Their performance on the field, I don't know enough about women's football, but thoroughly enjoyed what they did. Thought they played really well. A great game, the bits that I saw. But more importantly, they're really good people when they were interviewed afterwards. Their exuberance and infectiousness. You would say, right, well, when can I go and see these players maybe play in their club environment again? You then, you know, an hour after the game's finished and you've really got imbued by who all these people are, you're starting to get to know a little bit about their personalities from the way they've spoken after the game. To then see them invade a formal press conference was just wonderful. Yeah. And that's the memory of the weekend, not the Salford women winning the League Cup, not, you know, St. Helens having a great women's victory over York, their first defeat of the season, not maybe what's... Yeah, we sort of need to be cleverer about how we use social media.
Are we getting Georgia Stanway to present the Women's World Cup, seeing as she's got a rugby league connection?
I saw her hugging Ollie Ashelbott after the game, and there was some tweet, I think, from French Rugby League today saying that she was expected to be over there to, I think, maybe present a cup in the Women's Rugby League over there. So, yeah, absolutely. Another celebrity. But isn't she moving to Bayern Munich?
Yeah. So I don't know how far it is from Munich to Toulouse. I don't know my geography that well. So.
Women's rugby league in Germany. That's what we want now.
It's just capitalising on the successes of others. It's the easiest thing you can do, isn't it? It's trying to piggyback on the back of others' success to try and grab a little bit of the glory yourself. It's easily done. And I'm sure next week after the Leeds Saints game, if I remember to apply for accreditation, I'll be there asking people, what can we do to capitalise on this success of women's sport? Blah, 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 blah. Not bra, bra, bra.
Bra, bra, bra. Yes.
That was a bit of a Freudian. Of so where's Sigmund Freud?
That's one of the ways you can capitalize on it. No.
But yeah, so, you know, it's what can we do? What can we do? What can we do? We need to push these personalities. Keep saying it. It's interesting. And I mentioned this later with Richard de la Riviere. One of the people on telly at the minute on Sky, they use a lot for women's football, or football rather, is Courtney Sweetman Kirk, who plays for Sheffield United. She's never played for the England senior women's team. She plays in the second division of football, yet she's on the telly. Now, again, there must be opportunities out there for women in our sport who want to get a media career. Granted, I know rugby league's a lot smaller than football, but if you've got something about you, you could, you know, make a bit of money on the side, actually make some money out of your sporting talent because you aren't making it on the field anyway.
Absolutely. No, I'm with you. I think we just need to be smarter about jumping on the back of the success of the England women. Again, not literally. I thought everything they did, even the pictures that we've seen today, you know, have just enhanced the role of women within the sporting environment to be seen as nothing other than sports people. I thought the way Ian Wright talked about women's football post-match, he wasn't soft-soaping anybody. He was just saying, right, what are we going to do now? We've got this opportunity. And I think, you know, we need to be thinking in the same way. We need to be cleverer. Another example, I mean, you mentioned it briefly. Clearly, the comeback of Leeds in Catalan was pretty astonishing. You know, in any given week in Super League, you're 30 points to 6 down, you've had a man sent off. You're not expected to win. But again, a game with no pictures, except that if you go on the Betfred Super League Twitter feed to try and keep up with what's happening out there, you start getting flashes of the game coming in. And I'm thinking, well, you know, again, who has made the decision that those pictures cannot be made more widely available, particularly when there is a story that lots of people are going to want to talk about because of the way the game finished? Yeah, you got the Aidan Caesar golden point extra time try pretty soon after it had happened. Why couldn't we have had the whole match somewhere on a YouTube channel or, streamed somewhere? If Sky don't want to take it, I understand it. If BN don't want to cover it because Catalan won't cover the cost of it and they can only do a certain number of games every year, I understand that. But clearly there are pictures that are readily available and are of sufficient quality to put on social media. We lose a massive opportunity when people start talking about something and you can see the volume of traffic ramping up on social media, and yet we can't see the action unfold.
I think John Davison mentioned in a column he wrote last week about IMG and what they could do, mention things like that. You know, you don't have to stream everything, but you do need to make sure that we stream the important things. And why we aren't going to our broadcast partners and saying, look, if you're not doing this, can we do this? I don't know, because you do expect a lower standard for a YouTube stream, so to speak, than the full TV outfit. You know, people aren't going to expect on YouTube 700 cameras and graphics and whatever.
Which is one of the reasons why coming out of the restrictions we had where everybody was on Zoom, some without a camera, your anticipation of you know high tech changed. We are all now a lot more comfortable with not having multiple camera angles and all that kind of thing. Take the Toulouse Hull game on Friday night, which Hull were fantastic by all accounts. Toulouse probably will be disappointed with themselves because that's two home games running where they would have been expected to pick up points and they've fallen short. BBC Radio Humberside sent a live commentator to the game. So on the one hand, you've got the pictures coming in somewhere that are being used on social media feeds, and the highlights of which are going to be on the Super League show that Sky themselves are going to use. Oh, at the end of our game on Friday night, you can see all the tries from Holland to those. Well, that feed's going into somewhere, and you've got a bespoke commentator out there. Just marry the two up and put them out. You know, I just don't understand why you would sign a contract that prevents you from doing that.
It's just very odd. Mind you, in Scotland this week, they had to tell fans of lower league football that they can't stream games anymore because now COVID's finished, obviously, and restrictions have gone. The old ban's back, so you can't show games between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock on a Saturday, so you can't do streaming anymore for people in the UK. You can still stream outside the UK, so people are finding the various ways of still paying and seeing these games, but you can't do it for people in the UK. You can't make any money because that would be a bad idea. You know, that would not be good for it. But so it's not just us, which is
no. I'm sure there are legal reasons why we can easily say it should be done, and it clearly can't. But I think the last couple of weeks where we've had no cameras for games in France, and those four matches have all been really important games at both ends of the table. We missed a trick. And when you get a finish, you know, the one you had in Perpignan on Saturday night, there were a lot of people that would have really liked to have seen how that game was unfolding. I'm not even sure that too many people realised that Matt Pryor had been sent off, because the time lag between him being sin-binned and then coming on and being sent off, it was hard to actually work out what had happened. Was his sin-binning actually a standing off, or, you know, had he been sin-binned or had he been dismissed? No, it was hard to follow, and we should have made it easy.
How good were Salford yesterday?
Astonishingly good. And again, the easy thing would be to say that Saints have been off their game the last couple of weeks, and clearly there is an issue. And whilst James Roby is the GOAT, there is absolutely no doubt he, you know, along with Cameron Smith, have redefined the role of the hooker in the modern era. Him playing in the halves because they're short of players is really affecting their creativity. They made a lot of mistakes. But I don't really want to talk about St Helens, because I just thought the way Salford played, the fearlessness that they showed right from the very beginning, they're relatively unorthodox anyway. They're quite happy to move the ball wherever they are on the field. And that is something that Paul Rowley deserves a huge amount of credit for. But Brody Croft is in sensational form at the moment and really showed up St Helens' lack of halves. Tim Laffey had the sort of game that you watch it and go, why is he not, you know, playing at the very top level every single week? And, you know, he just tore that St Helens right-hand side absolutely apart. I would imagine Conrad Hurrell is still having nightmares of Tim Laffey. But everybody made a contribution. You know, Dan Sargeant came back after a long injury and had fitted in absolutely perfectly. Joe Burgess looked like an international winger. But everybody was fantastic. Every pass stuck, but it was the fact that they weren't conservative at any time. They wanted to play, and they believed in themselves, and they believed that if it didn't quite work out, they were good enough to get back and rescue the situation. They were a joy to watch, and again, go back to seeing matches of importance this Sunday. Salford are playing Leeds at Headingley in a game of two sides that are currently in form, both going for the six. Maybe only one of them will get in it. This is a really big game. It's almost a playoff before the playoffs. There's a women's game beforehand, which again could have a bearing on who finishes top of the league at the end of the regular season. And at the moment, neither of those games are scheduled to be shown anywhere.
I've got to check them allowed out on Sunday too. I mean, obviously the only reason I want to come to Headingley is to see the first game. Although I was amused by the mattresses strewn on the side of the street near Headingley, which I thought, this must be the North Leeds at least Trust grew up in. But
it's the end of term for the students, isn't it? So they're all moving in and moving out.
Tax dodgers, parasites on society. Students, I used to be one. I still am. Salford, well done to them. Looking forward to that game on Sunday. Well done Huddersfield Giants, who beat Warrington 32-22. as we heat the pain on Warrington. At least their women won yesterday, and I'll talk more about that in a second. And Wakefield winning at Castleford for the first time in a million years, 32-6, that was good. Wigan beating Hull KR 46-4, but Hull KR have got no players. What a weekend. What an exciting and unpredictable weekend of rugby league, apart from Huddersfield winning, because that was wholly predictable.
Well, huge concerns for Warrington, because yet again they've got themselves into a winning position and late on in the game found and contrived a way to throw it away. I thought Wigan were unconvincing against Hull KR, and I think Matty Peat said as such afterwards as well, and there was honour in defeat for the team that Hull KR put out there. They'll get some more players back. Mm. Warrington pretty fortunate, I think, because had Toulouse beaten Hull, then they would have been dragged into a relegation dogfight, no matter what Daryl Powell says. And actually, they play Toulouse the week after this. So that could have been really interesting. And your boys, yeah, what was it, first win since 2015?
First win in 18 or something, yeah. So that was good. And I was working, so I missed the first half, saw the score, and I was like, oh, bloody hell. I don't want to watch just in case I jinx them, because obviously they've been rubbish in second halves recently. But
very good, very impressive.
I'm enjoying that. Tom Johnson's rubbish now because Lewis Murphy's appeared. So, you know, Catalans have got damaged goods now. We don't want him. Lewis Murphy's the real deal.
I think we said last week that it would be interesting to see how Wakefield reacted to their Golden Point defeat to St Helens. And there was a school of thought that said it would make them, which I have to agree that I was in, and another that said it could break them psychologically. Clearly, they realised that if they could run the defending champions so close, there was something there they could build on. And they started really well. They were very patient, and every chance they got, they took. But Cass are just an enigma this season. What, 1 minute they're going to Hull, and you know Lee Radford's the king. Pick a drink of your choice. The next minute, they've lost at home to Wakefield, and it's back to the drawing board. Ooh. They're still in fifth. They're still going to make the playoffs, I think, but they have to get that inconsistency out of their game.
Radder's not the Dadders anymore. At least Wakefield get a trophy to look after for a bit, even if it's only for 6 months or whatever. But like, we've got it. It's good. It's good. The feel-good factory is back at Wakefield for about, you know, a week. We'll see what happens this week. But an amazing performance. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe my eyes. Elsewhere this weekend, you mentioned the wheelchair games. Big win for Halifax against Leeds on Sunday morning, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jack Brown back from Australia. He went straight back into the Halifax team and ran the show, scored 5 tries. That's great news for England. Mm. Because clearly the reason he's back is to play in the World Cup, but he's back in huge form. That changes the dynamic as well, I think, for the remainder of this season. It makes them very dangerous. Two teams that genuinely don't like each other as well, which is, it's a great rivalry. That's what wheelchair rugby league needs. So, yeah, well done, Halifax. I think it's Halifax-Wigan this week. So, again, if they can repeat that, I think they're going to the playoffs as favourites.
Well, we're going to hear from a London Rooster in a few moments, so stay tuned for that, because we have a nice little chat. Dragged him and Martin Coyd out of hospitality yesterday, so you know, it's nice of them to pop down and see us. But oh, it's warm. It's warm in that reception-y area at Headingley. Too many lights on. Need to turn some lights off, save some money with this energy bill thing, Bill. You know, have a word with Gary Hetherington. Unless I made loads of money from the patch off the RFL, then it's all right. I don't know.
Well, they did announce a $2 million loss for last year. Yeah,
turn those lights off. Turn those lights off, Gary. Save a few quid. Headingley, by the way, running in the first at Pontefract on Wednesday. Don't know how it's going to do, but we'll see. I just want to mention the Women's Super League before we go to all the other bits. And obviously, you know, I was there when Wakefield lost to Cass by 100 in the Challenge Cup when Cass played an ineligible play. It would have been funny if we'd gone and thrown out, but we didn't. Losing 102-0 to Warrington, I didn't realise until reading Mr. Carter's statement this afternoon that they were missing players through injury and illness and going on holiday, which is an occupational hazard at this time of year when you've got players who aren't being paid. Four under-19s playing, 3 on debut, and they had to borrow 6 players from Bradford who were in the same division, which it's not good. He says This is from Michael Carter's statement. We are still seeing one-sided results across the women's game, and this is something the IFL stroke Women's Super League need to look at going forward to ensure more competitive fixtures week in, week out. Over the last few weeks, we've lost a few players to other clubs. Within the women's game, there are no regulations on transfers between teams, as this still falls under the same rules as the community game, so players can leave at any point, whereas the rules for being unable to field a team are much more severe. We have flagged this to the IFL and Women's Super League regarding players being contacted directly by opposing teams several times, and we are hopeful that something will change to help the women's game grow and develop. The words are of Michael Carter, thanking Bradford as well for loaning those players. I mean, I'm not surprised that players have been contacted directly, because I think we've all heard the stories ourselves. If they hadn't have played that game, they would have been fined and potentially thrown out of the Women's Super League, which some unkind people may say might be, you know, to their betterment. But it's an interesting statement, and I like that the club have come out and put out a statement like that after such a result, because it's not good. It's not a good look for the game.
No, I think it's a great statement. It's a great explanation. And I think he makes a really interesting point that I hadn't thought of. They asked the RFL if the game could be postponed or rearranged. Clearly, there wasn't a time left in the season that suited both teams. If they hadn't fulfilled that game, they would have lost it 48-0. That's the rule. They've actually gone to the trouble of playing it and lost 102-0. What actually is the purpose of making them play? So to have this threat over them that they could be thrown out the league if they don't play it, and they're going to get a huge fine for a sport where the players don't even get paid. We've got that the wrong way around, I think. And I hadn't appreciated until he put his statement out the trials and tribulations that they'd gone through to try and get the game played. We have to be a little bit more realistic about where the women's game is at the moment. That if he went to the RFL and said, we are not in a position to fulfil this fixture with credibility, he should have been allowed to postpone that fixture. And if he had taken the 48-0, that's fine. What do we gain from 102-0 defeat?
Leeds won 88-0 yesterday.
I think it was 82, maybe.
Apologies. You know, that's not good. That's not good prep for them for this week against Saints, because Saints have just come through in an intense fixture against York. So we'll see what happens. But I just thought that was an interesting statement, because I didn't, as you said, I didn't realize what happened in the build up to the game. So some will say it's excuses, and you know, fair enough, that's your opinion. But I don't think he's excusing the defeat. I think that defeat was always on the cards. Yeah. I don't think anyone would think otherwise. But you know, if I was going to have a bet yesterday, which I tried to look for but I couldn't get on it, I would have had a Leeds Warrington double, and I wouldn't have been disappointed at the end of the day, unfortunately. But there you go. Phil, you're working on the magazine, so you need to go back and sort it out and sort out my words, because you know, I've written about songs of praise this month, and I have no idea how I've managed to do that, to be honest.
Well, I don't want to disappoint you, but I have edited your piece today, good. And you won't find a mention of songs.
all that research about Dame Thora Heard.
I get to read it. It's great, but
well, I don't blame you. I don't blame you, because I genuinely just had no idea what to write about this month.
Well, I think you'll find you have.
No, good. I mean, the good news is, right, on the programme now, so we've got two, if you listen to the podcast, there'll be more at the end from the Summer Bash. You'll hear from Barrow's men and women plus Whitehaven. That's at the end. Before them, you'll hear Richard de la Riviere, who's released a book called Rugby League on This Day, which is available at Philip Howard Books in Leeds. I've heard
it. Exclusively.
Yeah, so order that. That's coming up after we've heard from Lewis King, who is not the Golden Boot winner, as I keep thinking he is. But that's no disrespect to him, because he's still in the England squad and he was the domestic player of the year. And he comes from London and he sounds different to all the people we interview on this programme. We've got a Cumbrian accent and a London accent on the show today. What more could you want? And Mr. Wheelchair Rugby League, as I was going to put him on the thing on the bottom of the screen, England water carrier Martin Coyd will be on in a bit as well. So a Pats programme. Don't expect this every week. I'm not Dave Woods. You know, he's got proper guests and stuff. But Phil, I shall see you on Sunday, no doubt, at beautiful Headingley Stadium. Hopefully they've moved those mattresses.
Looking forward to it. I'm just going to put some WD-40 on the camera.
last time we spoke, we were here upstairs at the Golden Boot Award, which seems a lifetime ago now. Yeah. How have things progressed in your career since then?
Yes, been going well. Obviously, we're London Roosters now for my domestic club, so that was formed at the beginning of this year in February. You know, so it's sort of players from Argonauts, Gravesend Dynamite, Medway Dragons, that sort of like the best players coming together to create the new Super League team in London Roosters. So we're doing well, and I think our biggest achievement this season so far is beating Halifax away at their place. When, you know, we're the first southern based team to beat Halifax. I've been playing against them for 7 or 8 years now and never beaten them, so it was a really proud moment for Roosters to get that win.
How important is it being the sole southern team now in the competition, going up against these northern teams week in, week out? It must be a lot of travel involved, obviously, as well.
Yes, it's a big commitment for all the players as a southern-based player, but you know, as especially for an international player, when he's playing these higher intense games week in, week out to prepare for, you know, potentially the World Cup at the end of this year. So it's important for us to get in them high intense games.
You obviously say you've beaten Halifax. What was the emotion like after that in terms of, as you say, it's been a long time coming?
I said to the boys after the game that these teams like Halifax, Wigan, Leeds, they've been playing with each other for 10 plus years, at least some of them, and we've been training together for 4 months, and to get that win in that short amount of time, it just shows that we're in a really good place. And you know, I'm looking forward to where we can be this time next year, or even this time, you know, in a couple of years time, when we've got that couple of years experience together. And you know, I think we'll be a dominant team in the Super League in the future.
Mentioned the World Cup, obviously it's on everyone's minds. How focused are you on that? How difficult is it to focus on that when obviously you've got a domestic season to get through as well?
Yes, obviously a busy year for us, and you know, you sort of take each week and each game as they come. You know, you just focus on what's in front of you. Obviously it's on the back of your mind. You've got selection coming up and a World Cup in 3-4 months time now, so it's creeping up on us quickly. But yeah, you just sort of, you don't want to put too much pressure on your shoulders and just concentrate on what's in front of you, what you've got coming up next, and just make sure you're putting in good performances and, you know, impressing the coaches week in, week out.
And it's obviously a World Cup which there's never been as much coverage as wheelchair rugby league as there will be coming up this autumn. How important is that for the sport and it growing in the future?
Oh, it's huge. Especially for the wheelchair game, you know, the last year or two they've really promoted the game, and you know, to be on the same platform as the men's and the women's teams, it's fantastic, and I'm really proud to be a part of where the game's at now. And I just think this World Cup on home soil is going to propel the game even further. You know, the end of this year, beginning of next year, we're going to see the game in a different, you know, place again, I'm sure.
What's the pressure like? Because obviously England beat France a couple of weeks ago, Leeds beat Catalans in the Challenge Cup final as well. France going in as defending champions, but England, home nation, bit of expectation now that could go all the way and lift the trophy.
Yeah, of course. The international game, England v France, obviously gave us a lot of confidence, and I know, speaking to the boys as well in the Leeds team, to beat Catalan. And, you know, I think the favourites obviously were Catalan with them French internationals in that team. And for Leeds to get that win, you know, it's two England wins. And it puts all of us England internationals in a really good spot. And I'm sure we'll have the France camp questioning, you know, their decisions for this year. And I'm sure they're going to come out strong and fighting as well, you know, so... And we'll be prepared for that.
It's going to be a great tournament. Obviously, you kick off against Australia at the Copper Box, and we're 10 years on from the Olympics. It's going to be a great venue to play at, and there's games up in the north, and the final in Manchester. It's just going to be a great celebration of rugby league in general.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. And, you know, as a sort of a London boy myself from down that way, it's probably obviously the biggest tournament since the 2012 Olympics down at the Copper Box. So yeah, another proud moment, you know, to be part of that. And yeah, it's going to be a huge campaign for the Rugby League World Cup.
How is the wheelchair season going? How would you sum up 2022 so far?
I'm really pleased. It's a huge improvement on where we were in 2021. This is a terrible cliche, but COVID made it really difficult because a lot of our facilities were taken over by councils for testing centres and vaccinations, etc. So we thought about it long and hard over the winter, and I reflected personally that we were undercooked when we lost two games to France in November, the two test matches. We were close to them in the second game, you know, a few minutes away from possibly a victory, but they broke away. But it was very clear to me that our players weren't, if you like, match fit and playing at that level. So we've constructed the league this year where we had a 17 comp to start with, but now we're in a phase where the top four clubs, Leeds, Halifax, Wigan and London Roosters, are playing each other. There's two rounds to go, then we've got playoffs and a grand final. But I've been at a match this morning where Leeds have played Halifax, fabulous. And England, but also Wales and Ireland players, are playing at a high level of intensity, and it's working. So it's better preparation for the World Cup. But what I will say is the Championship is also fantastic. I'm playing some great games, and the regional leagues are well. You saw I was with you when we had a fantastic Challenge Cup final with the exotic Catalan Dragons playing against Leeds Rhinos in a blinder of a game, and a great Championship final before that, you know, so a Championship shield, to be correct. So yeah, better than last year, on the right track to deliver a great World Cup.
It's tricky because, I mean, you listen to the programme, you know, we've said about the women's game, I believe it's probably grown too quickly for the player base. Is that something that you have to bear in mind with how you build the wheelchair Super League, that you don't expand too quickly and dilute the quality?
Yeah, you're right. It's a good question. We're all right at this moment in time, but we do need to grow. So next year we're going to take the four times. We're going to take a magic round of the top six clubs, to Newcastle, to Cardiff, to Birmingham, to London, and work hard at marketing it to attract new athletes. I think wheelchair rugby league probably has a better chance than any variant of the game of expanding outside of traditional heartlands. It is rugby league in a wheelchair, but we've got a great opportunity, and the World Cup will give us that opportunity to showcase it. We build off it, and we have a good chance. You know, it's five a side. So you can get through a season with 10 players. There are disadvantages and hurdles to overcome with cost. So putting a game on is much more expensive than a community game of rugby league on a grass field. We have to travel quite a lot, and the chairs are expensive. So that naturally sort of restricts growth, so it doesn't grow exponentially, and we have this quality problem. But we've got a, you know, when I say we, the RFL and the clubs that play the game have got strategic vision on where we might go and a plan to get there.
Obviously, the likes of Wigan and Leeds and Halifax, traditional professional clubs who are involved in wheelchair rugby league, but the likes of London Roosters, not attached to a professional club. How important is it to have a mix of the two?
Yeah, they're different animals. So the Roosters are an amalgam of four clubs, of Argonauts, Gravesend Dynamite, Medway Dragons and Woodlands Warriors, who haven't contributed a player yet. But these are the clubs from the south of England who are doing well, but we're not going to compete with these northern powerhouse teams, if you like. So the Roosters coming together. You know, Halifax suffered a first defeat from a club from outside of the Heartlands when the Roosters. You know, we played them last Saturday. It was 42-38, last minute of the game. Could have gone either way, which was brilliant for the TV audience who've seen it for the first time. And I've heard viewing figures of over 4,000 on YouTube, which is fabulous. So I think the point I'm making is that, yes, you can be affiliated to a Super League club or a Championship club, and that's one route. Clubs coming together, and effectively with the Roosters as a regional team, which and those players who do want to improve and play Super League and get a representative jersey, there's a vehicle for them to do that.
Not that I want to go down the route of origin, but obviously Yorkshire Lancashire is just a dead concept to me, but I guess in the wheelchair game, you could have a North versus South match, and that would have some needle to it.
Yeah, it's part of our aspirations and what we do. And it's about, I wanted to be able to say to any athlete, and you know, we're the most inclusive, I think we're the most inclusive sport in the world. So male and female, young and old, disabled, non-disabled. You know, I'm thrilled that we continue to have an LGBTQI element to our game. And I think that's because we're so inclusive, everybody's welcome all of the time. So, yes, an athlete, be they disabled or non-disabled, can look at our sport and go, I fancy this. You know, 2019, we did an Ashes tour. These are really breaking boundaries for other sports. We've got a European Championships at the end of 2023, and then another World Cup in France in 25. A couple of weeks ago, I was in South Carolina on business and met with the USA Wheelchair Rugby League representatives. Had a fabulous cup of tea in an English pub, actually, in Columbia in South Carolina. And the prospect of American Wheelchair Rugby League is just incredible. They're reaching out into the military community, and they're playing in the World Cup in 25. So after the, you know, there's an opportunity for transatlantic rugby league championships. You know,
wait, Wales going to Brazil next year?
Yes, absolutely.
It sounds mad, but it's happening.
Yes, yeah, that's where we are, and we have the capacity to do this, and the inclusion side makes it special. The other thing is, and I believe this sincerely, it's a fabulous game to watch. This morning's game, some of the skill levels this morning were unbelievable. You know, you're sort of gasping on how did that person just make that happen, and to execute the skills they do at the speeds they do are just fabulous. So it's not easy, and there are barriers. So a decent chair is £2,000, you know, the best chairs are £8,000, so that makes it hard, but it means you get quite serious when you take the steps to get it going. So
yeah, I'm surprised Leeds let me have a go in a chair for now. It was some experience. It does give you a great insight into just how skillful the game is. I mean, not that I thought that, you know, you just turn up and throw a ball around, but it's great that we're seeing more clubs having these sessions where people just walk off the street, have a go in a chair, and learn exactly what rugby league is about in a wheelchair.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. We were incentivised by the RFL with a bit of funding, £500, put on a rugby league World Cup promotion event. So we are 21st of August. Leeds Rhinos are coming down, and we're going to make a full day of it. The Argonauts and Gravesend Dynamite and Medway Dragons and Woodlands are invited as well, and we've reached out via the council to local community groups and schools, etc. And we're going to have a whole day of wheelchair rugby league. Come and have a go. Oh, and by the way, there's a World Cup in a couple of months' time. You know, if you've enjoyed this, come and see that in the Copper Box, because that's going to be fantastic.
I mean, the World Cup, we're all excited about it. As you mentioned, the Copper Box, I'm probably not going to be able to get down there to see a game, but I'll be in Sheffield to watch a few, and should be at the final in Manchester. How big an opportunity is it for the sport with all the games being shown across the BBC? We've seen the, and I'm not going to say that he's going to be as big as the Lionesses have been, of course, but we've seen that as an example of something which was nothing a few years ago, but now has become something huge. Wheelchair Rugby League has a great platform coming.
So I think it can be as big as the Lionesses. The fact that we're unique in all three variants of the game, men, women and wheelchair, you know, let's dare to dream. Let's imagine a weekend of England playing whoever in the Wheelchair World Cup on a Friday, and men and women involved on the Saturday the day after. I think the nation will get behind us. I think the nation's got an appetite for supporting us in sport, whatever it is we do. Let's take the opportunity. Let's be visible. Let's talk. Let's do this. Let's talk to the media and say, hey, come and see this, because I've no doubt, I am 100% confident, as soon as you watch a game of Wheelchair Rugby League live, you'll go, I'm going to do that again. If something comes along, I'm going.
Should you written a book? It's this book, Rugby League on this day. There it is. Nice picture on the.
I was crossing the street when I met the love of my life. I chased after her. Nothing would stand in my way. Not the dog walker, nor the hot dog vendor. Finally reaching her, I asked, what do you call that amazing smell?
It's Gain Flings.
Gain Flings. My love had a name, but more importantly, it had a scent.
Fall in love with Gain Flings. Seriously good scent.
Try Gain Flings today with special savings at Family Dollar.
Back as well. Why have you written this book?
Well, I love the history of Rugby League, Richard. I really do. I think Rugby League has got the most phenomenal, fantastic, amazing, wonderful history. And it's not just games and players. There's all sorts of funny, quirky stories where you sort of think, only in Rugby League could that have happened. And I've tried to pull as much of it together as I can. I think in terms of me as a writer, I got very bored with journalism. I got very bored with going to games and press conferences. And I realised very quickly it wasn't me. I was the editor of Rugby League World for a while, and when they decided they wanted someone else to do that job, which is fair enough because I don't think I was very good at it, I decided I wanted to concentrate on the history of the game. So in League Express, I interview an ex-player every week. It's David Hobbs this week. And I absolutely love doing that. But before I started this series of ex-players, I used to write the On This Day column. So there's 366 days to cover, obviously. So I had them all written up quite a few years ago, but getting around to publishing it, and I kept finding new stories and better stories, and there had to be a point where I just thought, come on, stop, let's just get it published now. So the book basically is 366 stories on Rugby League, ranging from 1866 to 2022, with the England wheelchair lads beating the French a month or so ago. I loved that so much, I had to put it in. It was just so unbelievable. And I know you said on this show a few weeks ago that people stumble across the wheelchair game and they say exactly that. Wow, it's incredible. I didn't realise. And that was me a few weeks ago watching that. So I've got that in. So that's the most modern story. I've tried to cover as many of the legendary games and players as possible. But as I said, you know, lots of quirky stories in there as well that are a bit different. So 366 Rugby League stories for £12. So I hope people will think that's a bargain and they'll hopefully buy one off me.
I mean, you can just flick through and find just anything random on any day of the year. How difficult was it just to narrow things down to one per day?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's difficult for May because there's all the Challenge Cup finals have happened. So, you know, there's some amazing ones that I haven't included. So, for example, I think off the top of my head, the Wigan Hull final is on the same date as the Wigan Dewsbury final from 29 when we went to Wembley for the first time. So you've got to choose between those two, for example. You know what rugby league's like. Straight away people say, well, why isn't this in it? You know, why have you missed out this? So I got into trouble with an Egremont Rangers fan because I one of the things I did publicising the book on a Workington forum was saying that I'd included the story of Ellenborough Rangers, who in 98 beat two professional teams in the Challenge Cup, Bramley and Hunslet. And he immediately said, well, why haven't you got us beating Workington from that same year? You know, we beat them 18-0. We're the only amateur team to nil a professional club. There's always an angle, isn't there? But I went with Ellenborough, who were the only team, I think, to beat two professional teams in one year. So, yeah, there's tough choices because there's probably millions of stories that are fascinating enough to get in, and I could only choose 366.
I mean, it wouldn't be rugby league if you didn't upset someone, would it? That's the and it's not as if you're running the sport. You've just written a book. I mean, what was the what would you say was the most interesting thing you discovered, either when writing the column in the past or more recently for the book?
Well, I always remember when I was at uni, I went out to buy my copy of League Express one Monday morning in 97, and I just howled with laughter because the main story on page three was this fella who a couple of weeks earlier had bought League Express and read his own obituary. And that was the Wakefield Trinity fullback from 46, Billy Teal, in the first cup final after the war. And I love that story. And it led to the great, what I think is the greatest letter in the League Express mailbag ever. Thank you for my nice obituary, but I'm not dead. And the explanation was that the writer had just seen that somebody of the same name in the same area had died and had put two and two together and got it wrong. And I thought that was a lovely story. And I'd always remembered it. So I went and found the date that they'd printed the wrong obituary. And so I included that story. So I've tried to mix it up. I've tried to get some nice quirky stuff in there. Now, there's lots of Australian stuff because I've got a huge love and knowledge of the Australian game, you know, particularly the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s. So I've tried to mix it up. But yeah, I think that's one of my favourites. And I think Minnie Cotton storming onto the field with her handbag and then 6 weeks later with her umbrella. A lot of people don't realise she did it twice in 6 weeks. But so Minnie Cotton's in there. I think there's lots of quirky stories. There's lots of sad stories as well. You know, like I say, try to mix it up and get all sorts.
Yeah, it can't all be positive. It can't all be funny, can it? We do have a fascinating history, which I think, as we've said at times, sometimes we don't necessarily play upon enough, I don't think, as a sport.
Well, I think in 1996, we went into the new era with this collective attitude that rugby league used to be crap, basically, and now it's going to be brilliant. And you can't do that. The collective message, and Richard Lewis actually wrote word for word in the Sky Sports magazine in 2010, rugby league used to be big guys wrestling in the mud, fat guys wrestling in the mud, something like that. Now, I suspect somebody might have written that for him, but nevertheless, that was what went out from him when he was running the game. And that denigrates 100 years of history because, you know, he's talking about the era that Alan Hardesty played in, the era that Gus Risman played in. He's talking about the whole 100 years of being fat guys wrestling in the mud. And rugby league was wonderful, magnificent from 1895 to 1995. And if you choose to market your product in basically it used to be crap and now it's great, then why would people believe you? Because you'd have previously been saying it was great. You can't do that. And we've got a very negative attitude towards the history. I think a lot of I've always been an expansionist, but I think a lot of expansionists tend to be a bit snobby about a lot of the great rugby league towns or villages in some cases because they're not big metropolitan cities. And I think so a lot of the great rugby league towns are on the wrong end of that sort of an attitude as well, that we don't want the likes of Featherstone and Oldham and Batley and Workington playing our game. You know, we want Barcelona and Milan. And there was a lot of that nonsense in the mid-90s as well, wasn't there? And I just think that the Super League rhetoric really is still there to an extent. And there's this sort of attitude that is rather unfortunate, I think. And I think the history of rugby league 10, 15 years ago used to depress me a bit more than it does now. But I think there's more clubs are sort of celebrating their history a bit more, which I like.
Yeah, I think I've always used the example, and when people say Barcelona or Milan or whatever, it would be as if the Canadian Football League put a team in Leeds. Mm-hmm. Why would people go to watch it? They've no idea what this is.
The Milan story is hilarious because what it came from was Maurice Lindsay was doing a press conference talking about the possibilities, and he just suddenly said Milan, and then asked to justify this, he said, well, John Kerwin's wife is Italian, and that was it. John Kerwin was an All Black anyway, wasn't even a rugby league player just because he had an Italian wife. That was that was where Milan came from. So when people like us laugh about that, it's always Milan that gets mentioned, and that was the reason for Milan being mentioned, John Kerwin's wife.
Well, you could have picked any of the Italians in Sydney these days. I mean,
yeah, I know.
Italy are in the world. I mean, imagine what Morris would have made about the World Cup coming up. I mean, he's obviously been a divisive figure, but one, as we mentioned on the program, when he died, who did so many things for the sport, good and bad, that His legacy will probably be with us forever now.
Was it you that called him Rugby League's Maggie Thatcher? Because well, I thought it, and then I heard someone say it, and I thought, damn, I wanted that line because I thought it.
I don't know if I'm the first person to say it, but I did say it on the program. So yes,
right. Well, I did think it because I went on an episode of Backchat with Ralph Rimmer when he was first given the job, and so I worked out that Ralph is only the ninth person to do that particular job because some people run the game for 30 odd years, like Bill Fallowfield and John Wilson and guys like that did the job for so long that we've only actually had 9 different people in 127 years. Morris, I don't know, I think Morris got so much wrong. I really do. I mean, what he did at Wigan, of course, first time round was phenomenal. But what he then did at the RFL, I don't know, because he just happened to be in the hot seat when that £87.5 million cheque dropped in his lap. It could have been anyone running the game. There was always, you know, it was inevitable at the Super League War that they were going to try and get the English on side from the international point of view. And obviously, you know, the television over here, Sky TV, you know, Rupert Murdoch, there was obviously a link. So it's not like Morris went out there and made it happen. He always liked to tell the story that it was 75 million, then he beat it up to an extra 12 and a half, which, you know, fair enough, I'm sure that's true. But I think a lot of the things he did, I would question now whether he got it right. The 10-meter rule, for example, I think the game has evolved now into more of a forwards game, whereas you would think summer rugby would be more of an outside backs game. I think a lot of the changes that he made, the way the Super League was executed with 6 clubs basically who should have been in that division, suddenly Keighley being the best example, not being allowed in. He didn't seem to care who he upset, did he? And I think that's maybe where the Maggie Thatcher thing came from, that he was looking after the people at the top and he didn't really give 2 hoots about, you know, the people in the middle or the people at the bottom. Well, we don't want to start political arguments, of course, and get people angry with, you know, the show. So I wouldn't dream of taking that analogy any further. But one thing Morris was good at, though, he was high profile. You know, he was great with the media. He got celebrities to Wembley every year to watch the cup finals and the internationals. He got out there. He wined and dined with the sports editors on Fleet Street. And, you know, he certainly did good things. And then I think the second time round at Wigan, he tried to create what he'd done first time round, and I think he failed quite. I think Wigan were then rescued by Lenigan. But having said all that, we do need more Maurice Lindsays there. We need more people who will loudly beat the drum and get us out of there. There's too many anonymous figures in the game, and Maurice certainly had his good points.
And you are right, when those who are around do bang the drum, it's usually of a negative persuasion or very much. And I can understand why club chairmen want to put their club first, but it's not a great look for the sport in general when we have chairmen coming out and saying daft things on social media or on their own club websites, as they're allowed to.
You're right. But Maurice attracted a lot of negativity himself. I mean, he sent 12 players home from the 96 tour of New Zealand to save on hotel bills. I mean, that was absolutely awful PR for the sport, wasn't it? And when he quit the RFL and then jumped over to the Super League of Europe, I remember the front copy of League Express, the front page was that he described something as dross, drivel and other words. And they were the three big words on the front of League Express. And he basically said he was fed up of having to deal with the dross and dribble. I think something had happened at Keighley. I think the turnstiles were broken and it had landed on his desk. And that was what he said. I'm fed up of having to deal with dross and dribble and just wanted to deal with the big clubs. And that was a bit of caused a bit of a stir as well. So there you are.
Broken. I mean, at least, you know, imagine what he would have made of the St. Helens tweet last week of the chairs at Bellevue. So, you know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. I can't believe that.
Absolutely.
I can't believe you got bored of going to press conferences, because they're always full of insight and interest that fills the paper week in, week out.
I hated them after a while. There are people who have been rugby league journalists for decades, and I admire them so much. And I often say to Martin Sadler, how have you done this job for so long? Because your editorial this week could have been word for word your editorial in 1992 or 2001, that you're still arguing about the same issues. And I think I'm the sort of person who loves rugby league so much, and I can't understand why it's not bigger. So you start lashing out and blaming people. And I think now I can see that, and I can see that that's maybe not the right thing to do. And I think being confrontational, maybe as much as guys like Andrew Foster on Twitter, for example, who I'm sure you know who he is, I'm very much his type of fan in many ways. But there's another part of me that thinks that, you know, the fact that we are still a full-time sport at the top level and the fact that England can play a World Cup final and there'd only be 6 points in it, part of me thinks maybe in some ways we actually overachieve a little bit, because there's never been any money in rugby league. We've always had a very narrow geographical pool to get players and fans from. And part of me thinks that the fact that we can still have a Super League competition is decent. And I thought the bash at the weekend was really good and the women's game is fabulous. I kind of now think that maybe my approach to the job, maybe I was a bit negative. And you know, and when you do the job like that, I don't think you've got too much of a shelf life, because you can't keep having the same arguments with yourself.
And one of the first things when I got into broadcasting in 2002, I was told to do was to stay off the rugby league forums, because even though obviously everything's anonymous, people knew who I was. So, I had opinions on the way Wakefield was being run at the time.
Rugby league forums.
I mean, I can't believe they're still going and still full of probably the same people saying the same nonsense, but not that everyone
there was. The first forum I went on was an Australian website called rleague.com. And rleague.com was a really big website. And they had a forum. There must have been about 10 or 12 of us arguing with each other all the time. But one of the loudest and most aggressive arguers was actually who you'll know now as Damien Irvine. He used to post under the name Beaker Shark. And wow, I mean, he could start an argument in an empty cemetery. And I'm the same. And I remember sort of going hammer and tongs with him over various issues. And I remember other people who are still... A couple of them I've even used as writers, like Bryce Uhlenstein and Jason Emery, and there was only a few of us, and that was my first experience. I loved it. But now, you know, so there's Twitter these days, and like I say, I've lost a lot of the energy and passion for this sort of stuff. I'd much rather watch a Yorkshire Cup final from 1980 than something from today, or, you know, in the men's game. But that's just me, and we all move in different ways. At least I haven't sort of walked out and don't watch the game anymore, like a lot of my friends from the 90s who I used to go to rugby league games with. I didn't want to just sort of fall out of love with rugby league completely like a lot do.
I think the high watermark was Wakefield having an official club forum, which is a ridiculous idea on the start of it. And having the chief executive post as Chief Egg, that was their name on the forum.
But they all had forums on the website, didn't they? Because I don't think they realised what would happen. And then they all very quickly had to take them down. Because you'd have to employ someone full time to monitor them, wouldn't you?
Clubs can't afford someone to do that these days. It's too much hassle. It's bad enough on the. I mean, I was obviously briefly employed at Wakefield, and when you see the comments coming on the official Facebook and Twitter feed, you're just like, I would probably have just banned everyone, and you know, that's probably why I didn't last too long, but. I just have no patience for just morons. You mentioned the modern game. I was at the Bash yesterday. I didn't see any of Saturday. What did you make of the bits you saw from Headingley?
Well, I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it. I sort of dipped in and out of it. The highlights for me, I'm a Workington fan, so no highlights in that game. I think Town are pretty much down now, but genuinely hats off to Whitehaven. They've struggled a bit this season, but they've had a lot of injuries, but they've had Gary Charlton last year and John Tigoli this year, obviously two recent coaches or assistant coaches of Town. And I think a lot of those two guys, so I'm pleased to see them doing well. I think a lot of Paul Crary at Barrow and a lot of their best players are ex-Town players as well. T. Richardson, who should be in Super League. Jared Stack should have gone to Super League 5 or 6 years ago if Super League clubs weren't so negative about the championship. Jared Sammer also played for Town. What a player. So I enjoy watching Barrow doing well. And wow, what a season they're having. They're having the sort of season Whitehaven had last year. But I hope they're sort of able to sustain it next year as well. I think the big story, though, are Lee the greatest club in the lower divisions ever? I saw someone write that on Twitter. So that's had me thinking, you know, as a rugby league historian, I've been trying to think of a better one. But they may well be. And Featherstone, wow. Brian McDermott. Doesn't he only offer feast or famine as a coach? There's never any in between. He wins Super League 1 year, he's fighting relegation the next year, then he wins Super League again, then he's getting sacked. And now Brian is a very fascinating individual, isn't he? I'm very fascinated by coaches, and Brian has a uniqueness about him, and he has a personality that is very different and very out there. And I do wonder whether his players are always going to buy into what he's saying and the messages he's going to get across. And I just think with Brian, when it goes wrong, it goes badly wrong. And I went on the Featherstone forum last night just to sort of monitor what they think of him. And there's not much love for him there. And I just wonder whether he's sort of rugby league's Mourinho now with all his trophies on his CV, but someone who's maybe just going to be very short term at clubs, you know, put a rocket through them and then be heading off for pastures new in a year or two. Who knows?
I can't write him off because, I mean, you've mentioned on October 5th, like, 2017 Grand Final, and obviously there were other reasons perhaps that Castleford didn't perform on that day, but they were nowhere that season, and Danny Maguire had his probably best ever game and they won.
Yeah.
So I can't write them off. Well, the fans have never been behind him either.
No. Well, Leeds fans fell out of love with him very quickly. I mean, I don't know if I haven't had a Super League press pass for a long time, but I used to sit in his Harlequins press conferences, and there were times when he'd get up and leave, and seasoned veterans like Ray Fletcher would sit there and say, I've never seen anything like that. And Ray French would have his mouth wide open, and Hadfield would be looking around, and did that just happen? And they were regular occurrences. You know, I think rugby league needs people like Brian, but it's very fascinating because there is a pattern there, that there is a Mourinho-esque pattern that when it goes wrong, it's probably gone. But like in 2011 and 2012, when they were rubbish throughout the regular season and they win the grand final. So you're right. If anyone can win that grand final for Featherstone, it's probably Brian. But
I mean, when he was linked with the Wakefield job, which I don't think he was ever going to get because he probably cost too much money, I would have snapped someone's hand off to have him there just because of his record in the past. But I also would have appointed Ian Millwood over John Keir in 2006, which shows you what I know about rugby league, which is absolutely nothing. So who knows how I've got away with this for so long. It was interesting speaking to John Tigoli after that game yesterday, because I was sat near the Premier Sports commentary, so I could hear everything they were saying throughout. It was interesting watching them because they're up and down, up and down, up and down. Leon Price was like he was playing the game. But Kyle Amor mentioned towards the end of the commentary about the potential of a Cumbria Super Club, which I think has been going on as a discussion longer than even the initial Super League talks. And Gawley did say in the press conference, it was just me, in the interview after the game, that maybe that's something that needs to happen in the future. But it's okay, everyone down here in Yorkshire and Lancashire saying, oh, you must have a big super club, the Cumbrian Lakers or whatever, because we don't have the history and the rivalry that you're not having to throw away, because I'm sure you can have some kind of second tier clubs alongside. But as he said, you know, they're both fighting for the same player pool. So it makes sense in that sense.
Yeah, firstly, when you mentioned Gawley and Price in the same sentence, I think I'm right in saying that Leon sacked Jonty as his assistant. Now, if I'm wrong about that, I'll apologise, but that doesn't look a good decision, does it? Jonty was always someone who we at Workington knew would go on to be a successful head coach one day, but then unfortunately that happened, and he's now been a head coach at our rivals. And they've managed to pretty much now, you would say, stay up despite having a lot of injuries. And I think they're going to be a good competitive Super League club. For a while, sorry, Championship club for a while with Jonty as head coach, and good on him. He's a smashing fella, and I'm pleased to see him doing well. On the subject of Cumbrian Super League, of course, that is an example of what I was saying earlier about having the same conversations for years. I think my answer 10 or 15 or 20 years ago would have been to have a new club in Super League and Workington, Whitehaven and Barrow stay as feeder clubs. But I don't think there's the resources to have an extra club and to have four clubs. But another thing that people miss out is the fact that Barrow is actually a long way away from Workington and Whitehaven. Because, of course, Barrow, before the boundary changes in the early 70s, was actually in Lancashire. So you can't, people used to sling Carlisle in there as well, which is an hour north, and Barrow's an hour south. You couldn't merge. Well, Barrow and Carlisle technically merged, didn't they? But not really. So the merger involving them all was always a bit of a fantasy. So it would only be Workington and Whitehaven. I think Barrow are doing well because they've got South Cumbria to themselves, whereas, as you say, Workington and Whitehaven are sharing West Cumbria. But there's been times in the past, Workington and Whitehaven for three consecutive seasons got into the top eight in the Championship playoffs in 13, 14 and 15 before they both got relegated in 16. So, I mean, I think it can be done. I think Whitehaven and Barrow have been rewarded for staying local coaches with a big knowledge of the amateur game. I'm a big fan of Chris Thorman, and I never like coaches being sacked because I think he'll be better for the experiences he's had this year. But if someone does decide that a coaching change is going to happen, whether that be Chris or the club, I hope Workington go local and tap in. Because, I mean, clubs like Wathbrow and Kells and Egremont and Seaton and Hensingham, they're all in the National Leagues, and they are fabulous clubs with so many players and second teams and youth teams of all sorts of age groups. And not many of those guys ever seem to want to play for Workington or Whitehaven, and I don't know why that's necessarily the case, and I don't blame them. They're great clubs in their own right. And I just think if we can find a way of smoothing out that pathway and getting people into the professional game from the amateur game, then, you know, you would have the talent then. But when the Kells and Lothbrow lads just want to stay at their clubs, and Egremont as well, then, you know, Workington and Whitehaven aren't then accessing the best Cumbrian amateur players, which you would think is what they have to do.
Now, the one club which does have, as you say, access to the almost the monopoly on South Cumbria, but the Barrow ladies have pretty much the monopoly of the whole of Cumbria. Speaking to Amanda Wilkinson after the game yesterday, and they got promoted last year. Their aim was to consolidate their position. They're second in the table behind Warrington, who obviously had a ridiculous result yesterday against Wakefield. But Barrow may be the Cumbrian force in Women's Super League, and that can only be a good thing for the sport in general, in widening the player pool and making sure that the Cumbrian players don't have to, like the players in the North East who travel to Leeds, have to make ridiculous sacrifices to travel for training every week.
Yeah. I watched Barrow play against St Helens, first game of the season. It was live on the iPlayer, and people get very negative about one-sided games. I suppose, look, the Wakefield-Warrington score is not good. But I watched St Helens beat Barrow 72-0, I think, off the top of my head, 68-72. And I thought Barrow were very good. And I watched that, and I thought, there's a team there. There's good players there. And knowing the sort of club that Barrow are, and they're a fabulous club now, doing everything right, I just thought that there's, you know, I didn't know much about the league they were going into, but I'm not surprised to see them as a joint top or maybe second, just slightly behind Warrington. And I think that, you know, there's clearly some real talent at the top of that division. I think they got at least one player from Wigan, the second row, Vanessa Templeton. Yeah,
she's got a great interception game of the weekend as well. Yeah,
yeah, she came from Wigan. So you know, and the Amanda Wilkinson connection, of course, as well. So yeah, but looking at the top flight, you would hope that if Warrington go up, you'd hope they'd put some resources into it because they've obviously got the money to do that and to really back them and to maybe recruit a couple more and to keep developing. But Women's Rugby League, that is where the growth potential in rugby league is. And if people don't know that, then they haven't watched. If people who are watching don't know that, then I don't know what they're watching. Because you only have to look at the Lionesses, but you only have to look at women's sport everywhere to know that that's where the growth potential is. We've had 30 years nearly of wondering why, when Wigan play St. Helens in a magnificent game, people don't come flocking in to watch. But there's a ceiling that's just above our heads in men's rugby league. But in women's sport, there is that is where the growth potential is. And I've tried my hardest to get, for example, League Express to cover the women's game more, you know, to give it more space and to cover it more positively. They do a decent job and Lorraine Marsden's great. No arguments there, but just more space. And I think the game as a whole need to make superstars out of these people. I'm writing, as you know, I'm publishing Shani Kral's autobiography. What a story she has. What an amazing personality. What an absolutely wonderful, wonderful person she is. And what a brilliant player. I spoke to her yesterday after the game. She was so modest. And then I find out in League Express that she was the game star player of the match. And she's obviously praising everyone else. She's a superstar. She is exactly the sort of personality that rugby league is crying out for. And there's a lot of real personalities and superstars in the women's game for a couple of reasons. One, they haven't had their personalities media trained out of them. Two, there's different stories in the women's games. There's same-sex relationships in the same club and maybe on opposition teams. There's women who have babies and come back to play rugby league very quickly. There's issues like menstruation and sports, which, you know, there's so many other issues and there's so many more interesting interviews. And that's why publishing Shani's book really appealed to me. And we need to get, you know, we need to get more of these stories out there. But the games themselves, wow, every time Leeds, York and Saints play each other, they are magnificent games. And Shani told me that yesterday's game was just as good as all of the other times this season where those three have played each other.
I think this is where we, as a sport, we need to push those. I remember I've said this for years, so it's not as if I'm saying anything new again. But if you push those fixtures, which you know are going to be or have the potential to be good, you never know how a game is going to go, obviously. Mm. We've seen plenty of games in Men's Super League between top teams that have been absolutely
dreadful.
But if you put Leeds, Saints and York up against each other, chances are you are going to get a good game. I'm hoping Leeds, Saints is on our league or whatever next week because I know it's been played before the Leeds-Salford game on Sunday, which I'm hoping to go to. So it's interesting because if you look at the coverage of women's football and Sky use Courtney Sweetenham-Kirk as a pundit a lot, she plays for Sheffield United. They're not in the Women's Super League. So there must be female players out there, whether at the top Super League clubs or not, who have that potential to be personalities. And, you know, it's always an open invitation on this program. If people want to come on and try their hand at being interviewed or whatever, come on, you know. It's we're here to give you the experience.
Shani made her debut on Sky a week or so ago when Wigan played Leeds in the women's game. And she did both games. And I thought she was just brilliant. And she had me in stitches when they showed the shot of Fran Goldthorpe scoring that try and Shani dived at her feet and she said, I nearly lost my eyebrows. I thought that was so funny. Just going back to the standard at the top of the Super League in the women's game. I mean, John Davison tweeted a week or so ago that the problem is there's only three good clubs or three clubs playing at the site. And whilst he's right, 12 months ago, that was only one club playing to the right standard, the standard that we want. Good thing possibly that the World Cup has been delayed by a year for the England women because they've now got three clubs playing at the most fabulous standard. And all six games this season, I've seen the first five, didn't see yesterday's, but Leeds, York and Saints, when they play each other, wow, they're all absolutely fantastic games.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's another fantastic game on Sunday between Leeds and Saints. Now, it's good that York have joined the party and you know, it gives an extra dimension to things, especially because York aren't a big name in the men's Super League either.
Well, that's it. That's it. Yeah. I think it was your tweet that fired them up, Richard. You know, I think they might have finished, you know, third, but you put that tweet out and every player liked it. I thought that was brilliant. And so you've obviously fired them up there. Maybe it's one of those stories that they put it on the dressing room wall to fire them all up, that Richard Shaw Wright thought they'd finish third.
I mean, if they're listening to me, then they're going wrong. But I did keep tipping Saints to beat Leeds and Castle beat Leeds, and Leeds would win. Yeah. So.
But what a team York have. What a team. Because Tara Jane Stanley, you guys have said, is probably the favourite to win the Woman of Steel. But I think that Sinead Peach and Holly Dodd probably would be second and third. And I asked a mate of mine, which he's an Australian, I said, which women from England would be in your World 13? And, he said Jodie and Shani from obviously from Saints, but he said Sinead Peach. And of course, she's not even in the England squad. So she's just been named in the Knight squad. So hopefully that means there is a path back, because I think something might have gone on behind the scenes. And hopefully with her being named in the Knights, obviously she's far too good to be in the Knights. Hopefully that'll be a way back for her, and we might still see her in the World Cup. But she was York's best player yesterday, according to the match report from Dave Parkinson. And, you know, she didn't have starting props. She had two back rows as props. So, you know, even without the go forward necessarily, she still had a great game.
Yeah, I trust Dave's judgment. Having co-commentated, that was the summariser on the Shield final with him last year, which was a very much a last-minute thing, having walked into Headingley and they said, do you want to do some commentary? Well, go on then. I'll sit next to Dave and try to pick the play of the match, which is a difficult thing. But no, it's good to see these games, and it's good to see them getting more publicity. It's a shame that, in a sense, Sky had to show Wigan and Leeds the other week, because it was only ever going to be one result. And you'd hope that they can manipulate the fixtures so that doesn't happen, because that doesn't... I know, as you say, a blowout doesn't necessarily have to be a poor game, but it's not a great reflection. Much like we saw with the Lionesses winning 8-0 or 10-0 or 20-0.
Yeah.
It's easy to then detract from the sport for those who want to do so.
Yeah, any game between those top three at the moment, fabulous. And I hope Sky show the playoffs, because second's going to play third in a major semi-final, and wow, what a game that's going to be. You know, but all three will still have designs on finishing top, although Saints are going to have to benefit from a big points difference swing, but it's possible in the women's game, because they've got Huddersfield and Wigan still to play.
There'll be some players at York who definitely want to win that League Leaders Shield, because when they were at Castleford, they didn't get any medals for winning the League Leaders Shield, which was controversial at the time. And now they hand out medals for winning the League Leaders Shield. they'll be hoping to go on to glory. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned mergers. I'm now fully behind, especially with the results yesterday of some kind of combination of Castleford and Wakefield, because it can't be doing anyone any good to be losing. You know, a Super League club shouldn't be losing 50-odd-4 to an amateur club in Lee Miners. You know, and there's no disrespect to Lee, but if you've got a Super League team badge next to your name, that shouldn't happen. And you know, I was there for the 100-0 when Castleford beat Wakefield a few years ago, and it doesn't do anyone any good, especially.
No, I agree. Once you get into three figures, but you know, early in the Challenge Cup earlier this year, when Saints had a couple of even 70s and 80s, I firstly just marvelled at what they were doing, and even in the opposition, if it's 70, this might sound a ridiculous argument, but it still does imply that they're, you know, feeling can play to some extent. And you know, I think there was a good player, because there clearly were good players in that Barrett team, as they've proven, and they lost that game 68 or 72-0, and I could still see they were a good team.
No, I remember Wakefield lost to Saints. I think it was 66-0. I was commentating on it pre-COVID and pre-Saints winning anything. And Saints just never gave up the ball. So there's nothing you can do anything.
Yeah. Well, if you remember back in 96, we had that rule that the scoring team kicked off. And that would make a lot of difference. That really, and I don't know why they went back on that. They do occasionally have good ideas, but then they still panic and think, oh, well, this got criticised on a forum somewhere, so we'll go back to what it was. And that was one rule change I liked, that the scoring team kicked off, because it happens in nines, for example, and you just wouldn't get those blowouts necessarily. But hey, you know.
As time runs out on us, what would you change in rugby league? There you go. There's a big question for you to answer in, you know, 60 seconds or so.
I think the biggest on-field issue in rugby league is the decline of the British halfback in the summer era. You know, I'm mates with Scoey, obviously, but we went from a time when Scoey and Andy Gregg and Tony Myler were genuinely brilliant players against the Aussies, and they could open up Australian defences at will. We then had an era where, in the early days of the summer era, the best players tended to sort of be individual types, like the Paul brothers and Yestin and the young Sean Long, and then Danny and Rob came through. they were still brilliant, brilliant Super League players, and Kevin, of course, but they weren't doing anything on the international stage. You know, throw Leon in there as well. And they've all admitted that, so that's not me being rude. And we've now moved on to another stage where today's halfbacks aren't as good as either of those two groups. And they're I mean, the last World Cup, when Luke Gayle had a brilliant season for Cass and then looked like he'd never played rugby league before in the World Cup, there's got to be a way of sorting that out. And I don't know what the answer is. You can't just sling Gary Schofield on the coaching staff and Andy Gregory. You can't do that. But I don't know what the answer is. But there needs to be some serious looking at why our halfbacks can't go onto the international stage and do the business. Because in all of the positions on the field, we've got players who have done well at test level in the last 25 years. But we haven't had a single scrum half or standoff, with the possible exception of Paul Sculthorpe playing out of position. None of them are done well. And that's the one thing I would want to change about the game.
I mean, the dog agrees. You can't just throw Scully in there.
Yeah.
Here's his name and she's run off. I mean, you have to do like the women and get Australians in, like Courtney Winfield Hill, and that's the only
one. Yeah. I tell you what, as good as Courtney is, I'd still be looking at Zoe Harris, though. I think Zoe Harris is a magnificent player and scored a try. She just goes through defenders like they're not there. So I get the impression they'll go with Courtney because the social media have really bigged her up when she did switch. And when they do that, you get the impression that the coaches wanted them. But I think Zoe Harris, for me, it's hard to compare them, but I hope it's not done and dusted. I think it's done and dusted that Georgia Roach is going to be one of the two halfbacks, but I hope the other one is still up for grabs. And I hope that Zoe Harris is... But you're right, yeah. Andrew John's qualified for Great Britain. We should have done more.
Only him and Matthew Johns and John Alone would sign for Wakefield in 2000 would have gone busted. The book is Rugby League on This Day. Where can we get it from?
Well, it's difficult to get books into Waterstones if you're just a nobody like me, but you can buy it on eBay for searching the title. You can buy it at Philip Howard's Books in Leeds, which I believe you might be familiar with, and you can buy it at a shop in St. Helens called the St. Helens Book Stop. And they're the three places at the moment. But eBay, £12, including postage. And for that, you'll get 366 rugby league stories. And I think that's value for money.
It is indeed. Richard, thank you very much for your time. Apologies for the
no
dog.
Problem.
And no problem. We shall no doubt speak to you again soon.
Yeah, cheers. Cheers, Richard.
How tough was it out there then this afternoon, Jody? It seemed to be a very stop-start game. There didn't seem to be much flow about it.
Yeah, I think it was tough and playing out there. And I think it's a big occasion. Some of the girls have never been in a situation like this before, so you've got to take that into account. But overall, I think we dealt with it pretty well. And I think the best thing about us and a team, we can go and beat teams 50-0 when it clicks and we go and put 50 points past people. But when we've got to get down to the tough and the rough and the nitty-gritty of the game, the fight for each other, and just to be able to do that is just as good winning like that as it is beating teams like 50 odd points. So I like winning when it's a bit closer. It's more enjoyable to play in, definitely.
Yeah, I listened to the commentary last week and obviously the scoreline was a lot more comfortable than today, but as you say, you prefer playing in games like this and you're going to have more of these tough games going into the latter stages, hopefully.
Yeah, and I think as well, as the more the women's game grows and all of the teams get that competitive, and as we build towards kind of 2024 and a one structure Super League, we want to be up there and we want to be involved with the big teams, and we want to be playing like that every week and showing how good the women's competition is, and then it makes it better for everyone, and hopefully more people will watch off the back of that and it'll just keep growing and growing.
Amanda, if they'd won, you'd have been level on points, but you've gone 4 points clear of Featherston thanks to that result. How important was that this afternoon?
Oh, really important. I think, you know, from a coaching point of view, for me today, we come here and like Jody said, you know, I was unsure how the girls would deal with the occasion. I think we've prepared well. We're at a confident stage in our progress at the moment, and I think they just stay composed, and when it got really, really tough, they just worked for each other today, and that's what I was proud of as a coach. And yeah, today we needed the win. Do you know what I mean? Didn't want to put the pressure on the girls, but we needed to come here today if we want to stay up there with the best, and we needed to get the points, and we did. And full credit to them. So, you know, losing our fullback and having to put a prop at fullback, do you know what I mean? It shows the strength in depth that we've got in the team and how much they are willing to work for each other, and good attitude. So proud of them all.
Big try just before half time. Did that change what you had to say?
No, I think, you know, I always have a look at stuff. I don't have a lot to say really at half time. I think at the end of the day, once that whistle goes and they kick off, the girls go out there and do what they know best, you know, and play the best they can. And for me at half time, it's just some little tip-ons, you know, just like tips on things they can improve on, things that they maybe could do a little bit better. You know what I mean? And that's it, really. I don't really give them a lot. I think, you know, they're out there and they can react, and the only way they're going to learn and get better is by reacting and sorting it themselves.
You almost appear to be an outpost out there at the top end of the country. Most of the teams based in West Yorkshire and in Greater Manchester. Is that an advantage to being able to be able to keep players from the North West in your squad?
We've got a full Cumbrian team, so another thing that I literally pride myself on. I think it's great that I've gone there. You know, I've worked at Leeds Rhinos, I've worked at Wigan Warriors, and to come and be able to coach back in my hometown and say that we've got a full Cumbrian side, I think it's good for Cumbria and the area to say that, you know, we're not bringing in stars from elsewhere. We'll look to grow our own, and I think the future there looks good.
Because that is one of the things about the competition at the moment in the WSL1. A lot of talent concentrated around Saints and York and Leeds, but you're building a nice little team here at Barrow.
Yeah, it's really good, and I think that we've got, in the background, we've got the reserve team, we've got the Raider girls, so it's building and building and building, and it is really good to see that, and we want to be up there and competing when it does change to that Super League One and there's only 8 teams left. We definitely want to be up there and be one of those teams.
Let's see how the captain and the coach answer this one, because last week I was listening to the commentary, as I mentioned, it was said that the aim this year was to consolidate the position in this division. Obviously you're high up there at the moment. What's the aim now?
Yeah, I think that we try and win the league that we're in. We try and win WSL2, and if we can do that, I think it'll be an overachievement season, I suppose, because yeah, the aim at the start was, I guess, to survive. We've already done that, and we're exceeding expectation. There's no getting carried away with that. Amanda grounds us at training. We take one game at a time. But yeah, we've definitely got our eyes set on that grand final and giving Warrington a surprise when they hopefully come up against us.
That's going to be a big game, isn't it? Obviously, they're just above you in the table at the moment, but they're the team you've got to catch, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're standing there as the most sort of experienced team, if you will. You know, they've got players in there that have been playing at this level for a while, and, you know, they are probably the toughest team in the competition. But like Jody said, for me, I'm quite focused as a coach, and all I want to do is make each one of these the best it can be, and I keep saying it, and, you know, that's what I do, that's how we coach, that's what we work on in training. And they'll go out there, play the best they can, and the points look after themselves. And at the moment, I'm really impressed with the great attitude, the willingness to want to learn and get better and be the best they can, and the way they work for each other. Carry on as we are, and like I say, points look after themselves and the league will.
Finally, I may have got this wrong, because you're supposed to be on the show before Christmas, but everything went wrong. And I think you thought we dialed us up while we were in the middle of another programme, as we all got the dates wrong, but were you a decent footballer, is that what I'm told?
I played for Bradford City for about 4 seasons down here when I lived in Leeds, so at the time football came first. Must have got a bang on the head at some point and realised sense, and then in Barrow there isn't really a women's football team to play for, so yeah, rugby takes priority now, and I've retired from football and given rugby the last kind of as many years as I've got left playing, because I'm 34 now.
Well, you'll be watching the game tonight. Obviously, there's never been a higher concentration on women's sport than there is at the moment, especially with the Lionesses in the final tonight.
Yeah, we're staying down. We're going to watch it in a bar in Headingley as a team. Coaches there getting VIP treatment in commercial in a minute. So, but then they're going to join us back in the Headingley for the game. So that'll be a bit of a throwback for me, living here for a while. And I think what you said before about teams down here and players, there's so many players that I recognise from my time down here that play for different clubs and they've been around. But at Barrow, I think that's the nicest part of being involved with the team. It's everybody's local, everybody wants to be there and wear the Barrow shirt for the right reasons. And we don't need to attract people from away, we just need to get what we've got and keep everyone happy in the squad. And I think we do that really well.
Paul, how do you sum that one up?
Just a little bit scrappy from both sides. I think the Bash does that to teams. You play in front of the cameras, you always get the unexpected. You know, we've asked them to be a little bit more conservative today. After the Bradford game, we're a little bit scatty, but scatty got us tries. We're a little bit scatty today, not that structured, but we did enough to win. Some big calls from the ref towards the back end of the game, so hopefully they got them right for both sides. And at the end, I thought we would deserve winners. I think it was a big battle, but we played probably the more expansive style that got us the win. And like I say, Gerrard's through intercept, but at the end scored a great individual try, and then we just pushed on there and sinned the game out. But it wasn't for the purists as in coaches, but it's probably good for the speckies to see that teams are going to throw the ball around.
Is that what you expect from Jared Sammet? He's going to make mistakes, but he's always going to come up and produce that big play for you.
Yeah, and we let him play. You know, that's what we brought him in for. You know, as a team coming up for the championship, you can't grind against these teams. You've got to play, and we've got to play to win. So the style has helped us get to where we've got. We give him a free roll. You know, he's threw a few intercepts this year, Jared, but you know, we don't criticise because he comes up with a big player like that, and we bought a maverick. Hakim's a maverick, but also wins games. We've got some solid players. Sometimes we need a little bit more discipline with the ball. We played a little bit on yardage where probably we said to him at half time, just go set for set. You know, we've got great players that can come up with some brilliance, but we didn't go set for set. You know, we turned the ball over, pushed the ball on yardage, got us into trouble, but we repelled them. And I thought the second half, well, from 16, I think 16-6 down at one point we were, that we clawed our way back and then had enough in us, which we have done all year. At Sheffield, come back from 20 points down with 20 minutes to go, you know, and come back from a few teams, and we've got that football in us that gets us some good wins. And it was a big win today because they've gone five straight, pushing behind us for the playoffs, and that, you know, might cement our place in the top six, which is an incredible achievement for coming up from Championship One.
With Halifax and Batley winning yesterday, how important was it that you did the same again today?
Well, it's massive for us. You know, we don't know what's around the corner for us. We're probably a little bit busted at the moment. Cal Foster's going in for an operation. Jared Stack needs one. Brad Curlin hurt his knee today. So it's about, you know, how we might limp through at the end of the season. But if we do, whatever happens now, we've just exceeded all expectations. We were wrote off at the start of the year by everybody that would be in the bottom two, and we're in the bottom, I think we're fifth now. And it's just incredible, really, for a side that's come up, a lot of locals that we've blooded over a few years. Charlie, Jake Carter, hasn't played for 4 or 5 weeks, comes in, made a few mistakes, but put a great kick in round the post. And, you know, it's just incredible. Charlie, you know, come through our systems. Ryan Johnson didn't play today. He's got poison in his system. And all them players have been fantastic all year, with the majority of locals, with a sprinkling of great, great attitude from travellers.
Well, teams coming together, the women winning earlier as well, they've got a whole Cumbrian side. How important is it that you have that basis of homegrown players in the school?
Oh, massive. I mean, I played here in Wimbledon, the Stones Bay Championship, which was the top division at the time, and there's clubs that it's most successful when you have a sprinkling or a majority of homegrown players. And the good enough Luke Cresswell picked up the man of match today. He trained with us for a year before we signed him, so we worked with him for a year. Charlie, another one that we brought through our system, played in the academy. Ryan Johnson, Jake Carter, they've all come through our academy system, you know, and we've worked hard as a club to drag it back from the brink. You know, coming in 2014-15 when there was nothing here, just a shell. We did it in 2005, you know, lost 22 straight, and it was a shell. We built it up, we left under, you know, some poor circumstances. We come back in 2005, my team, Stevie Ray, And with this group of board, Stevie Neal and his troops, and John Coward and Darren Herbert and all them players, all them good people, and we put together a plan to grow over a period of time, and the plan now is just starting to bear fruit. We've got a little bit of money because of what we've done outside of the rugby, in the ground, and it's bearing fruit with what we've done. It's been a long process, but well worthwhile when we just start to bear the fruits now.
Jonty, sum up your feelings after that victory.
Relieved, to be fair. I thought we were very ordinary today. First half, we struggled with the ball. We were 50% in yardage, 25% in good ball, just not building any pressure at all. Whereas working, I thought they were very good with the ball. I think they only maybe coughed up once or twice in the first half, and they put us under some pressure, but our goal line deal was okay in the first half, and it kept us, obviously we scored, we kept in the game, and it just wasn't the performance I was wanting in the first half. And even the second half, we just we do some good and then do some bad and let the pressure off, and then we finish well. We did finish well, and that's how I want us to play, and I want us to be like that. But I think the occasion got to the lads regarding the situation in the league, with Joe's been nipping at our heels, and they knew how important today was for the 2 points, because I'm not saying we're safe, but it gives us a leg up to be safe. I think that'll be working more or less done now. They've got a lot of games to win to get out of the trouble we're in. So a lot at stake in the local derbies, bragging rights and that. But I think at the back of the mind, it was a lot of pressure on our lads today to perform well.
The 2 points and the points difference as well. Obviously, Dewsbury got heavily beaten yesterday, and those two late tries from Bowman obviously helping you as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sick of every Sunday afternoon what our game, looking at what Dewsbury's doing, and I think I maybe don't need to do that from now on, because we've got a tough run in. Don't get wrong, every game's tough in the Championship, but we don't play a top six side anymore. where I've looked at Dewsbury's and Towns, they've got a few difficult games. I think Dewsbury's only got two home games on the road, a couple of tough teams. So yeah, we talk about us every week. We talk about how good we need to be and what we need to do better. And we talk about it, but didn't necessarily do it. You know what I mean? And it bites us in the backside in the games when we don't do things correctly. So a lot of learning from today. Again, we need to put stuff right. Our skill level needs to be better. Our discipline is absolutely woeful at times, and it's proved that all year, and it puts us on the back foot.
Great support from both sets of fans as well. Obviously, plenty of noise from yours, but it was good to see the working fans still here at the end.
Yeah, of course.
Applauding their team, because obviously they're doing it tough on and off the field.
Yeah, of course they are. I'm an ex-Town player and coach, and I feel for them what they're going through at the minute, but the fans are always good at working, and I can't speak highly enough of our fans. They've been loud today, and they always come in numbers, and so fair play. That result will go a long way in bragging rights back home.
What's better, playing in one of those games or coaching one of them?
It was satisfactory getting the winter days as a coach. You're playing them games, and I don't know, as you get older, things mean different things, don't they? And it's brilliant just getting a win, whether you're a coach or a player in them games, because it means that much.
And how important is it to secure that safety so you can build and work on what you're going to do next year?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're looking at talking to the players already for next season, but we needed to be in the Championship to do that, and I think we've got a long way to do and securing our Championship status. We've been hit hard all year by injuries. I mean, you're missing people like Callum Phillips right through, and Alex Bishop, and we haven't had the same spine all year, and it absolutely cripples you sometimes. But fair play to the lads, they've dug in every week. We've run, I said before the game, we've been up at half time against Halifax twice, against Featherston. We go to Batley and get a point, and then we come in. I think sometimes like you said before, the occasion gets you. I just need them to believe in themselves like I believe in them, because I know in them games when we have done well, when we go on set for set with teams and get a fair share of the ball, we take some turning over.
I was listening to Kyle Amor, who was sat next to me doing the commentary on TV. He mentioned towards the end, perhaps Cumbria needs one team. That's never going to happen, is it?
I think down the line, and I don't know how far down the line, you look at the player pool, and everybody looks at Cumbria as a hotbed of rugby league. And I played amateurs 30 years ago, and I've seen what teams were there then and what teams are there now. There's still some strong teams, but the numbers have dwindled dramatically. Carlisle haven't even got an amateur or a pro side. And the player pool in the semi-pro game, we'd be going after the same players locally, and I think something does need to happen. I maybe get undrawn and quarter for saying that, but I really, not as a coach, but as a rugby league supporter in Cumbria, I think in the future something needs to happen to make Cumbria a spectacle. You look at the St Helens game, we got nearly 5,000 there, and there was supporters from just coming to see the best teams, and St Helens are obviously that. And then we played Featherston 2 weeks ago and got 600. So the appetite is there. I'm not saying Feathers is a bad side, because they're a good side, but you know what I mean, that the appetite's there for Super League rugby in Cumbria, and I think that's where we need to go at some point.
Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.